The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher. Welcome back to another week of NFL coverage here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 11 weeks of the NFL season are in the books, and unfortunately, the Raiders took an L once again as they lost to the Patriots down in Mexico, but it's all right because the AFC is so badly these days. The 0-10 Cleveland Browns are still eligible for the playoffs, so that means the Raiders are still eligible for the playoffs. So we're going to go ahead and break down the full Raiders-Patriots-Mexico game, as well as look at every matchup that we saw from week 11. As well as look ahead into week 12 of the NFL season and make every single bet and pick by the spread in our weekly betting segment, Straight Cash Homie. So let's not waste any more time and hop straight into it and look at what went wrong for the Raiders down in Mexico.
Mexico!
Stadia Azteca, one of the most famous venues in all of the world.
Pase rápido para Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper da la arrancón y hace el pie desde el centro. Se está yendo de allá a la 20, a la 10, a la 5. ¡Touchdown!
For the second straight year, the Raiders traveled down to Estadio Azteca, down to Mexico City, to take on the Patriots, and unfortunately, we did not have the same success that we did last year, a year ago, after going down and beating the Texans in Mexico. It looked like the Raiders passed Spanish 1, but just like my high school career, they failed miserably on their Spanish 2 test as they lost to the Patriots 33-8 in Mexico, and what truly was an embarrassment in front of all the Raider Nation fans down in Mexico, and what turned out to be a bunch of Patriots fans down in Mexico. Last year when we went down and played the Texans, it obviously showed that we are 75% fan base, 80-90% took over that whole stadium. This year we played the Patriots, and it was more of a 50-50 split, to be completely honest with you. The crowds were chanting Brady, Brady, Brady. Well, that's what happens when the Raiders haven't done shit the past decade, and the Patriots have won, what, 3-4 Super Bowls, and Tom Brady's one of the greatest of all time. Yeah, fans are gonna be fans of good teams. Yeah, the Raiders are getting there, but obviously they're not on the same level as the Patriots, as they got absolutely demolished 33-8. I talked about it on the preview all last week, the two different approaches of trying to adjust to that altitude down in Estadio Azteca. Mexico City has an altitude of over 7,000 feet high. That's higher than Denver. That's higher than pretty much anywhere in America. But the Raiders truly did look gassed. There were a couple plays where the Patriots were actually dehydrated, but the Patriots did look better prepared after staying back-to-back weeks in Mile High because they played the Broncos the week before. So they did get to adjust their altitude a little bit. The Raiders came in with a different game plan, tried to show up the day before, and it looked like it showed a huge impact because after the first drive, Tom Brady just comes out in this no-huddle offense, and he's check down, check down, check down. He goes 9-for-9 on their first touchdown drive and is looking unstoppable while Raiders defenders are gassing for airs. Obi Melifonwu, making one of his first starts of the year, is tapping his helmet, asking to get called out, tap out, tap out. And the Raiders defense actually had a chance to make a huge play on that first drive by Tom Brady because Rex Burkhead fumbled the ball, but the Raiders could not recover. The Patriots get the ball back, like I said, and Brady was 9-for-9 on that first drive. He checks down to Deion Lewis. A couple missed tackles later, Deion Lewis scampers into the end zone, and the Patriots are up 7-0 just like that. The Raiders' very next drive, Derek Carr tries to get something going, and he goes deep down the field to Johnny Holton. The ball bounces off Johnny Holton's shoulder, goes flying a couple feet into the airs and into the arms of a Patriots defender for another tip ball interception. I swear at least half of Derek Carr's interceptions this year have been tipped by our wide receiver into the air for another interception. And man, oh man, I'm getting truly sick of seeing all these tips end up in interceptions. But there was something to hang our hats on in that first quarter, because Khalil Mack got a hold of Tom Brady, takes him down to the ground, and ends the first quarter down 7-0. Moving on to the second quarter now, Brady gets the ball back after the Raiders offense did establish the run a little bit, but cannot convert on third down. They had a couple punts. Brady kicks off the second quarter with a 52-yard pass to Brandon Cooks over TJ Carey, and surprise, surprise, Reggie Nelson gets beat over the top once again. Brady then gets him down to the goal line, starts calling audibles, start calling hot routes. He looks over, gives a couple of hand gestures to Danny Amendola. Danny Amendola, 2 seconds later, is wide open in the back of the end zone to cap off a 9-play, 80-yard touchdown drive, and the Patriots are up 14-0. And this is where truly the momentum shifted the most in this game. Down 14 points, Derek Carr and Marshawn Lynch were leading the Raiders down on their best drive of the day on 11 plays, 68 yards, driving it all the way down to the 5-yard line where Derek Carr connects with Seth Roberts. Seth Roberts just got to go down. There's only a minute left and a half anyways. He gets spun around while he's holding the ball like a loaf of bread. He fumbles. The Patriots recover. They're able to drive down the field and kick a 62-yard field goal before the half ends. And just like that, they take a huge 17-0 lead, and the momentum is killed. The Raiders should have got into the end zone. They could have got 7 points right there. Would have only been down 14-7 going into halftime. Instead, they're down 17-0, 3 possessions, and Tom Brady gets the ball to start the second half. And surprise, surprise, guess what Tom Brady did to start the second half? The same thing he did to start the second quarter. Go deep again to Brandon Cooks, and this time no one catches him, and he goes 64 yards for a touchdown to put the Patriots up 24-0. The game's pretty much over from here. The Raiders offense punts again. The Patriots add a field goal to go up 27-0. The Raiders start getting into desperation mode. They're driving the ball downfield. They get into a 4th-and-1 situation about midfield. And who do they give the ball to? Jermaine Olawale. Let me preface this by saying I love Jermaine Olawale. I think he's a great blocker. He comes in, runs hard, plays hard, does everything you can ask since Marcel Reese has left. But why not give the ball to Marshawn Lynch? He was averaging 6 yards per carry in this game. He was tearing up the Patriots' run defense in the first half. The problem was we were down 14-0, 17-0, 24-0, so we couldn't even run the ball. We had to abandon the run game. But when we get into a 4th-and-1 situation, why the fuck is Marshawn Lynch not in the game? His name is Beast Mode. Why would you not put him in? Todd Downing, explain it. Jack Del Rio, explain it. Somebody's got to take responsibility for this fucking call. It made no sense at all. I know we were down 27-0 at this point, but I don't care. I still want to see the Raiders be productive, and I still want to see this offense put up points, put up yards against this Patriots defense that was getting torn up by everybody. Literally everybody was tearing them up the first half of the season. I will say that the second half, I guess these last 6 games, they've only allowed like 13 points per game, but still, this is a game where the Raiders had to put up points. What was my projection last week? 42-38. So I'm not surprised that the Patriots put up 33 points, because I said we're going to have to put up 40 to beat them. I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. This is Tom Brady. Tom Brady just completely picked apart this Raiders defense. When we played in zone, it was dink and dump, and he would just find his guy wide open. He was picking on our linebackers. Yes, Navarro Bowman, we all know he hasn't been the same in coverage since that Achilles injury, but he's the best linebacker we got. I don't care if he can't coverage, he can stop the run, but the running backs were beating our linebackers. Their tight ends were beating our linebackers. Then when we switched to a man coverage, we were getting beat deep by Brandon Cooks. Tom Brady, after going 9-for-9 on that first drive, ended the day 30 of 37, over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, and I'm not surprised, motherfucker, because what I say, if Jay Cutler just tore us apart with the Dolphins the other week, what'd you think Tom Brady was going to do? What did you really think he was going to do? I can't even really be too mad about the defense, because I said we're going to have to put up 40 points to win anyways. I was expecting him to let up 38 points to Brady, so 33 really isn't even that bad. Could have had a couple turnovers. What really screwed us in this game was the turnovers, because we can't turn the ball over against Tom Brady and expect to win, giving away points from starting with Johnny Holton, the ball hitting off his shoulder for an interception, to Seth Roberts fumbling within the 5-yard line. You can't turn the ball over when you got to get points against this Patriots defense. Oh, man, it's so goddamn frustrating. This play calling is still despicable because Todd Downing still is taking way too many short checkdown passes, third and 10 to 5 yard pass, third and 10 to 5 yard pass. And I've mentioned it before. Yeah, some of that criticism has got to go to Derek. When this past game, he was only averaging 4.8 yards per pass. But some of that's got to be on the play call too. You got to send a couple guys deep, but we saw what happened when we tried to go deep to Johnny Holton. He can't catch the ball. There were a couple plays to Crabtree. We went deep to Crabtree. He couldn't hold on to the ball. There was a couple first downs Crabtree couldn't hold on to. Crabtree honestly did not have that great of a day. The whole entire wide receiver corps had a terrible day because they just kept on killing drives with the drops that turned into tips for picks. They were just killing momentum left and right. 8 points. This is supposed to be one of the top offenses in the league. They were top five, top six offense last year. Now we're in the bottom 20. How's this even possible? Todd Downing, I've been calling for you to get fired all year, but I don't think Jack Del Rio is going to do that now. How do we even go on from this situation? And the worst part about it, you can't just say, oh, fuck it, this season's over, forget about it, because the Raiders are still alive. As I mentioned to start off this podcast, the 0-10 Cleveland Browns are technically still alive. The Raiders are now sitting at 4-6. Well, guess what? The Bills and the Ravens are tied for that wild card spot with a record of 5-5. The Kansas City Chiefs have lost 4 of their last 5. They're sitting at 6-4 record in first place in the AFC West. It is truly amazing what the hell is going on in this AFC West, from going from one of the best divisions in football last year to looking like complete shit, where the only team that can win is the Chargers. Man, I don't know what the hell is going on, and I don't know what the hell is going on with the Raiders. This offense is despicable to me. Derek Carr, these past couple games before this game, threw for over 300 yards. Even this game didn't look that bad. It's just too many times we're killing momentum. We can't keep things going. Marshawn Lynch had his best game of the year as he averaged 6 yards per carry. Obviously, he had a couple touchdown game the other week against the Dolphins. But still, Marshawn Lynch was getting the ball running. We just could not sustain drives. We couldn't sustain anything. And we got picked apart by Tom Brady. Something's got to change. Something's got to give. But the Raiders, like I said, we're still alive. We still got a chance. We got the Broncos next week. The Giants followed up after that. Hopefully, we can get back-to-back wins. We'll see what the hell happens. I'm just so pissed off about this damn Mexico game that we had to give up a home game to play against Tom Brady. I've mentioned it on the podcast last week. I wasn't too big of a fan to keep on giving up home games and home games. Well, surprise, surprise, the NFL and Mexico just extended their lease to 2021, 2022. So that means the Raiders will most likely still be playing in Mexico, and this is what it's going to start looking like when we're in Las Vegas. Neutral crowds, 50-50, where when Tom Brady comes to Las Vegas, guess what? All those transplants who live in Las Vegas, they're going to be rooting for Tom Brady because he's fucking Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers is going to come, and it's going to be half Packers fans. The Raiders will no longer have the black hole. The Mexico game was just a sign of what's to come for the Raiders, and it is truly a sad time here on the Bay's Golden Days. But hey, like I said, not all hope is given up yet. I still got to see Khalil Mack sack Tom Brady, so that was one thing I was happy about. Of course, I'm not happy about this whole performance, but like I said, the Raiders got to turn it around this week. If they don't beat the Broncos, the season's pretty much over. We got to beat the Broncos. We got to beat the Giants. We still got the Eagles, Cowboys, a couple games still left on our schedule, and we still got to play the Chiefs one more time. So anything is up in the air. Like I've said this whole entire podcast, this whole entire season, the NFL truly is a parody of the season. It seems like anybody could beat anybody on any given Sunday. So let's go ahead and look at who beat who this given Sunday and won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Let's go ahead and check out week 11 of the NFL season in 60 seconds.
It's Sunday in 60 seconds, week 11. Here we go. The Vikings have that loving feeling. The Bills start Nathan Peterman, and he throws an interception. Kamara catches the touchdown and drops Washington in OT. Peterman picked again.
Snap, hold.
Oof. Avert your eyes, Mitchell. Peterman. Pick. This sack bags another Jags win. Peterman is still throwing to the Chargers. Two straight wins had the Bucs throwing fits. Peterman. Pick. And here comes Tyrod Taylor. Mike Wallace earns his Lambeau leap. Lamar Miller and the Texans go for gold.
Oh, that one's going to go in a highlight somewhere.
Yep, right here. Apparently, the Giants still have a receiver, and he makes a miracle grab to shock the Chiefs. How do you say football in Spanish? I don't know, but Tom Brady probably does.
He shirtless ball! Touchdown!
and the Eagles keep soaring in Dallas. Time's up. I just want to hold on to Week 11 and never let go. Never, ever, ever let go.
Well, it's time to let go of Week 11, so let's go ahead and look back of every single bet we made last week on the Bay's Golden Days podcast during our Straight Cash Homie betting segment. To kick it off, let's stick in the AFC West and look at a team that actually won you some money this week as the Bengals upsetted the Broncos in Denver 20-17. Those Bengals covered that plus 2.5-point spread to win as road underdogs, and let's look how they got it done. Andy Dalton only needed 154 yards but got 3 touchdowns. AJ Green with a huge fourth quarter touchdown to cap off his 4-catch 50-yard day. The offense wasn't even needed too much as it was this Bengals defense coming up big. Brock Osweiler threw an interception. It was intercepted by Dre Kirkpatrick, who took it 100 yards but did not score a touchdown. One of the longest interceptions ever that did not result in a touchdown. Vontaze Burfict came up the big strip late in the game for the Bengals to recover that fumble that led to AJ Green's game-winning touchdown. And just like that, the Bengals win for the first time in Denver since 1975. Yes, for the first time in 42 years, the Bengals won in Denver, and the Broncos were not too happy about it as they are now on a 6-game losing streak. They fired their offensive coordinator, but we'll get into the whole entire thing once we get into that Raiders-Broncos previews. But the Broncos lost at home to fall to 3-7 in last place in the AFC West. We'll keep it moving now to the only team that won in the AFC West, and that's the Los Angeles Chargers. Yes, this is the second time this has happened now, because I remember making a big deal about it on the podcast earlier in the year. I said it would not happen again where the Chargers were the only team in the AFC West to win this week. Well, surprise, surprise, it happened once again as the Chargers absolutely blitzed the Bills 54-24. We're talking about an absolute ass whooping. The Chargers had a franchise record 37 points in the first half. And you know why? Because the Bills probably made the worst quarterback decision ever, starting Nathan Peterman in the first half over Tyrod Taylor. Peterman threw 5 interceptions. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 interceptions. Tyrod Taylor the whole entire season only had 3 interceptions, and they benched him for that? Yeah, a lot of controversy going on in the NFL, and Tyrod Taylor does not want to be a part of it. He just wants his job back, and I don't think we're going to see Peterman again, because that was absolutely pathetic and one of the worst performances I've ever seen from a quarterback making his debut. But let's talk about the Chargers, because their defense getting all those points. Joey Bosa just eating up the Bills. The Chargers also had a big day from Phillip Rivers, 251 yards, 2 touchdowns. Keenan Allen was the main beneficiary with 12 catches for 159 yards and 2 touchdowns. Melvin Gordon added another touchdown. Like I said, this was a franchise day for the Chargers, and I guess it's a nice welcoming party to LA to put up their most points ever with Phillip Rivers at quarterbacks. The defense did it, the offense did it, and they absolutely mopped the Bills 54-24. But let's go ahead and talk about the biggest upset of the week in the AFC West. Hey, I ain't gonna complain, even though we lost you some money on this game, because I took the Chiefs minus 10.5 points to beat the New York Giants. The same New York Giants that just lost last week to the San Francisco 0-9ers. Yes, they were the team that enabled the Niners to evolve into the 1-9ers. Looking like the worst team in the NFL, the Giants come back and beat the Chiefs 12-9. How the hell does this happen? Well, I'll tell you. Alex Smith, who only had 1 interception the whole entire season, threw 2 more this game and almost threw a third at the very end of the game. But luckily, they were able to get the PI that led to a field goal that pushed it to overtime. But once we got to overtime, Eli Manning on 4th and 6 throws a Hail Mary deep to Rashad Lewis. He makes an amazing sliding one-handed catch within the 5-yard line. They kick the field goal and they win the game as Eli Manning pulls off probably the biggest upset of the year. I'm talking about, this was the biggest road favorite that we've seen all season, 10.5 points. Eli Manning now passes his brother Peyton Manning for 2nd most consecutive starts at quarterback with 209 straight starts. This was just a game that the Chiefs didn't even look like a Chiefs. Like I said, Alex Smith had 2 interceptions, almost threw a third. Hell, even Travis Kelce threw an interception. They were trying to just outthink themselves. They were trying to get too cute, while the Giants were looking real cute because they actually pulled off their fake plays, their fake punts. Landon Collins had an INT and 11 tackles. Their defense came to play. and they shut down the Chiefs to only 9 points, 3 field goals. What has happened to this Chiefs offense? Like I mentioned earlier in the show, they've now lost 4 of the last 5 games, but opens a huge door in the AFC West. The Raiders are still only 2 games back. The Chargers are only 2 games back. The Broncos are falling out of it, but it really is anybody's division right now with the Chiefs falling. We got to figure out what the hell is going on with the AFC West, but like I said, the Raiders still got a chance, and we'll see what happens. But let's go ahead and see what's going to happen now as we move on from the AFC West. We'll stick with the Giants division and go with that NFC East, as one of the biggest games of the week was a division matchup between the Eagles and the Cowboys, and the Eagles won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days by covering their 3.5-point spread and absolutely demolishing the Cowboys 37-9 to extend their division lead to 4 games now with the 9-1 record. The Cowboys now sitting at 5-5 after they experienced their worst home loss ever. This was a game that was actually close at halftime. The Cowboys were up 9-7 and so the Eagles and Carson Wentz just absolutely went off. But the Cowboys at the end of the day had their worst home loss ever. They allowed over 215 rushing yards. I mentioned it last week on the podcast. No Sean Lee, no defense for the Cowboys, and no Tyron Smith once again. Ezekiel Elliott, doesn't matter if he's suspended or not. If you don't got Tyron Smith, this offensive line is looking like a fraction of itself from last year. Dak Prescott threw 8 games with Tyron Smith, only was sacked 10 times. Through 2 games without Tyron Smith now, he's been sacked 12 times. You can talk about the Zeke factor all you want, but Tyron Smith, one of the best left tackles in the league, I think he is truly the biggest factor, because without that blindside protection, Dak Prescott looks razzled. He looks like he doesn't know what's going on. He threw 3 interceptions this game. Yes, 145 yards, 3 interceptions. He had a QBR, which was 30. I think if you threw the ball into the dirt every time, you have a QBR of 36. That's how bad he played. He got stripped for another touchdown late, and the Eagles just absolutely run away with this dominating 37-9. Carson Wentz only had 168 yards, but 2 TDs. He's got 25 TDs and less than 5 interceptions. He is playing at an MVP level right now, and it's truly astonishing to see the strides that he has made from last year. And just like I said on our 2017 NFL Kickoff podcast, I'm predicting Carson Wentz had a better year than Dak Prescott, and so far this year it's looking like Carson Wentz is the future, showing why he was a first round draft pick and showing why Dak Prescott, without an elite run game and without an elite offensive line, is looking like that 4th round draft pick quarterback. But hey, we'll see what happens. The Cowboys still got a chance to maybe come back and get a wild card spot, but sitting at 5-5 and Zeke's suspension is still for 4, 5, 6 more games, whatever it is, they got to start scrapping back and play just like the Raiders if they want any hope of getting back into the playoffs. But let's go ahead and keep it moving now and finish off that NFC East, as we had the Redskins taking on a division leader, New Orleans Saints, and the Redskins almost put off the huge upset. I had the Saints winning by 7.5 points. They won the game but did not cover the spread, so I actually lost you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. They ended up winning by 3 points, 34-31. Drew Brees ended the day with 385 yards and 2 touchdowns. Both of these 2 touchdowns were his final 2 drives of the day to force overtime. Drew Brees just getting it done once again. Alvin Kamara had a juggling catch that somehow got into the end zone. We see Raiders getting balls interception off 2 passes all the time, and the Saints are just tipping it up, juggling around like they're in the Renaissance or something, because they just ran all over the Redskins. Mark Ingram with only 11 rushes for 134 yards and a touchdown. It's because they were losing quick in this game, but the Saints come back for a huge win to win their 8th in the row, becoming the only team in NFL history to lose their first 2 games and then run off 8 straight. They're sitting at first place in the NFC South, and they really do got a hold of that division now with the Panthers being on bye. Let's go ahead and look at the Buccaneers, who are the only team that won in that division. They've won back-to-back wins now with Ryan Fitzpatrick, but they're still sitting with a 4-6 record. They took care of the Dolphins 30-20 and covered that +1 point spread for the upset victory right here on the Bay's Golden Days to win you some money. It was Fitzpatrick, as I mentioned, with the back-to-back wins. Do we got a quarterback controversy between him and Jameis Winston now? Probably not, but hey, it looks like there's still a little bit of Fitz magic left in the tank. Fitz threw for 275 yards, two touchdowns. Mike Evans returned from suspension, had five catches, 92 yards, and it was the Dolphins dealing with their own quarterback issues. Jay Cutler had three interceptions by halftime. You want to add in the concussion also, and his day was done. Matt Moore tried to lead him back with 282 yards and a touchdown, just connected with Kenny Stills left and right seven times for 180 yards and a touchdown, but it was not enough as the Buccaneers got the job done 30-20, and then we'll stick in that Bucs division and look at the NFC South. The Falcons had a huge Monday night matchup against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, and once again, they won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days with the +3 upset, winning 34-31 over the Seahawks. Yes, they were the underdogs on the road, but I told you, without the Legion of Boom, without Richard Sherman, without Cam Chancellor, that Matt Ryan would have a chance to tear up this Legion of Doom. But Matt Ryan only needed 195 yards, did have two touchdowns. Coleman had a touchdown, and this truly was a back-and-forth day as Russell Wilson was trying to put the team on his back. We're talking about a one-man team. Yes, I've already mentioned the stats a couple weeks ago, how he accounted for more than 90% of this total offense. Well, he had 258 yards, two TDs, 86 rushing yards, a rushing TD. He leads the Seahawks in rushing yards, leads the Seahawks in rushing touchdowns, lead him in just about everything. He connected with Baldwin and Jimmy Graham for touchdowns late in the game to try to complete that comeback, but they fell just short as Blair Walsh, 52-yard field goal, comes up just a few inches short to send the game into overtime, and it seemed like a little bit of karma coming around to bite Pete Carroll in the butt because they had a chance to kick a field goal right before halftime. They went for the fake field goal, and it comes back to screw them as it failed. I didn't understand it. They're about 20 yards away anyway, so they try to get a fake field goal that was going to be a option run, get to the end zone with only 4 seconds left. Should have just took the points because they ended up losing by those same 3 points that they need to force overtime. The 52-yard field goal comes up short, and the Seahawks' chances of taking a hold of the NFC West come up short because they fall to 6-3 as the Falcons improve to 5-4. Let's go ahead and talk about who's still in first place in the NFC West, and it's the Los Angeles Rams sitting at 7-3 because they lost to the Vikings 24-7. This is, again, that I took the Rams +2, but unfortunately they lost, so lost you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. I'm sorry about that one, but who saw this one coming with Case Keenum outplaying Jared Goff? Jared Goff has been one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL so far this year, but this offense got shut down by this Vikings defense. Todd Gurley only had 15 carries, 37 yards, did manage to find the end zone, but Robert Woods came up limping at the end of the game. He left hurt. The Rams just got shut down by Eric Kendricks in this Vikings defense. The Vikings are the only team in the NFL that are top five in offense and top five in defense at the same time, because on offense, it just seems like Adam Thielen is just carrying the team game after game after game. It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback, whether it's Bradford, whether it's Keenum, whether Bridgewater is coming back. This man continues to put in work as he had six catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. I'm pretty sure he's on record to have the best season since Randy Moss. Yes, that's how long it's been for the Vikings to have an elite wide receiver, and Adam Thielen is looking like it, because Thielen and the Vikings and Case Keenum and whoever's at quarterback just keep the Vikings trucking forward as they improve to 8-2. We'll see if there's any controversy between Teddy Bridgewater coming back and trying to take Case Keenum's spot, but the way Case Keenum's playing right now, you kind of just got to roll with him. You got to play with the hot guy right now. It's similar to the Dak Prescott, Tony Romo situation last year. We'll see how that all sorts itself out. But the Vikings, as of now, are 8-2, first place in the NFC North. The Rams fall to 7-3, still are first place in the NFC West. The Niners were on bye, like I mentioned. So let's go ahead and stick with the NFC West and finish it off with the Cardinals, who lost to the Texans 31-21. This is a game that I'd said take the Cardinals minus 1 point. Unfortunately, they lost because they had Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. Yes, they were down to their third string quarterback. He did throw three TDs, but two big interceptions. He tried to get Larry Fitzgerald involved all he could. And Larry Fitzgerald, great news to hear. He had a 1-year extension for his contract, so OG Larry Fitz is going to be around at least one more year. He ended the day with 9 catches, 91 yards, and a touchdown to pass Tony Gonzalez for number 5 on the all-time receiving list. But it was the Texans who got the job done with Tom Savage at quarterback. Yes, Savage did not even have too great of a game. He had 230 yards, two touchdowns, an interception, and had a fumble. This man has had 10 turnovers in his last three starts. I'm pretty sure it's more turnovers than Deshaun Watson had the whole entire year, but they were able to run the ball. Their rookie, Dante Foreman, out of Texas, had 10 carries, 65 yards, and two touchdowns. Unfortunately, though, he did tear his Achilles after his second touchdown, had to be taken out of the game. DeAndre Hopkins was the one leading the wide receiver core with four catches, 76 yards, and the Texans got the job done, 31-21, to still stay alive somehow in that AFC South. That's another division that is pretty similar to the Raiders and the AFC West, how it's up for grabs and the parity of anybody beating anybody. So let's go ahead and look closer into the AFC South as we'll talk about the Titans and the Steelers on Thursday Night Football prime time, where the primetime killer bees came out and put a stomping on the Titans, 40-17, to cover that 7-point spread and win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. And we got to say dilly dilly and give the cheers to Big Ben for calling audibles dilly dilly left and right and throwing four touchdown passes. Big Ben Roethlisberger needs to change his name to Big Game Ben, because after throwing for 299 yards and four touchdowns, this is now five straight primetime games that he has won in a row. And he's won his last 10 out of 11 primetime games with 20 touchdowns and only two interceptions. We got to move the Steelers to Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football every single week, because when the big lights come on, Big Ben comes out to play, and he came out the ball with his favorite wide receiver, Antonio Brown, who was out there dancing with the stars on Thursday Night Football. 10 catches, 144 yards, and three of those touchdowns. AB cannot be stopped, showing why he is one of the best wide receivers in the league, if not the best wide receiver over Julio Jones. The man is half his size, but twice the skill. Antonio Brown cannot be stopped. They absolutely tore up the Titans. It was an ass-whooping from the start, and Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, these killer bees are playing their best football of the season, and the Steelers are sitting at an 8-2 record, tied with the Patriots for the best record in that AFC. So the road to the Super Bowl might go to Pittsburgh. We'll see how these last couple games play out and see if they can get the best record over the Patriots. But hey, right now they're sitting with the first week bye in the playoffs, and I've mentioned everybody else in the wild card scrambling. Their only competition is the 5-5 Ravens, and I don't see the 5-5 Ravens tracking them down anytime soon. Even though they did beat the Packers this past weekend, the 5-5 Ravens, I don't see them as a wild card team. And let's go ahead and look and see what they did, because they beat the Packers, as I said, 23-0, and gave you that minus 2-point spread for the Ravens to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. This was truly an ugly game that Joe Flacco didn't do much. Brent Hundley didn't do much. Flacco had one interception. Hundley had three interceptions. That was the big difference, because this Ravens D with those three interceptions also had six sacks to bring it to a total of five turnovers. This Ravens defense and John Harbaugh, just like I said last week on the podcast, I like Harbaugh coming off of a bye, 2 weeks to prepare. They shut out the Packers for the first time at Lambeau in 11 years. Yes, Brent Hundley, we all know the sad, tragic story about Aaron Rodgers. He's struggling. Jordy Nelson can't get things going. Their offense can't get nothing going. And they're shut out at home for the first time in 11 years as John Harbaugh gets his 100th victory. And the Ravens, as I said, staying alive in the wild card. They beat us earlier this year, but I'm still not impressed by what the Ravens are doing. I think we can catch them, catch the Bills. Look at these two shitty teams that we should have beat, and we'd be sitting pretty in a wild card spot right now. But hey, we're 11 weeks in. Can't talk about the past. Can't talk about coulda, woulda, shoulda. Let's go ahead, though, and finish off this AFC North as we had the Jaguars taking on the Browns. The Browns sitting at 0-10, lose 19-7, with the Jaguars covering that 7.5-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. But Browns fans, it's all right. You still have a chance. What? Are you serious? The Browns? Yes, I started the whole entire podcast off with it. The 0-10 Browns are still mathematically alive to make the playoffs. Yes, as I mentioned a couple times so far, the wild card team is sitting at 5-5. At 0-10, hey, if the Browns win out, end the season 6-10, all they need is the Raiders to lose out, the Bills to lose out, the Ravens to lose out. If everybody else loses out and just NFC just dominates the AFC, the Browns can still get in. It's fucking ridiculous, but it just shows the parody of what is the NFL this year, what is the AFC, and like I've said the whole entire podcast, as a Raiders fan, I can't complain because we're still fighting for that wild card spot, and if all the teams in the AFC keep on losing, I'll be fine with it because the Jaguars now take a hold of the AFC South with a 7-3 record, the Titans sitting right behind them at 6-4, one of those teams is looking like they might get the first wild card spot, but that second wild card spot is still up for grabs. It's just shows how crazy this whole AFC-NFC parity thing is. The Jaguars completed the sweep of the AFC North this whole entire season. We'll see if they win out their division now. The way that their defense has been playing, they could pull it off. And they got Leonard Fournette back now, who got back over the hump and got back to averaging over 100 yards per game. I think even with Blake Bortles, the Jaguars defense should be good enough to still win in the division. But hey, I hope the Jaguars lose out. I hope the Titans lose out. I hope the Bills lose out. I hope the Ravens lose out. I hope all these teams ahead of us in the wild card lose out. And we still got a chance, but who knows what the hell's gonna happen. Let's talk about the last division game of the week. We had the Lions and the Bears. The Lions are the only team really giving the Vikings a push for that spot in the NFC North. The Lions, though, got the win by 3 over the Bears, 27-24, to improve to 6-4 on the year. This was a 3-point spread. I told you to take the Lions, so our final game of week 11 ended in a push, and this was a push for Matthew Stafford to push him past his idol Troy Aikman in passing yards on the all-time passing list. It was his childhood idol, and now Matthew Stafford, after throwing for 299 yards and 2 touchdowns, passes his OG Troy Aikman. Growing up in Texas, we all know the stories between him and Clayton Kershaw growing up together in Texas. A good story there for Matthew Stafford, and he gets a big win over the Bears. This was an interesting game that went back and forth. Mitchell Trubisky tried scrambling late, had a 20-yard scramble on a fourth down situation. Jordan Howard was trying to put the team on his back with 15 carries for 125 yards and a touchdown. Tariq Cohen got into the end zone, but at the end of the day, it was Marvin Jones once again coming through for Matthew Stafford and getting a game-winning touchdown, and the Lions win 27-24. And that is every single pick, every single game, every single bet we made from week 11 of the 2017 NFL season. I'm pretty sure we won you like 7, 8, 9 games. Had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games that we lost on one push. Still not terrible odds, not as good as last week, but we're still winning you more money than we're losing right here on the Bay's Golden Days. And then we're talking about money so much, y'all know what time it is. Where's Randy at?
Straight cash, homie.
That's right, Randy. It's time for Straight Cash, homie, right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast, where we look at every single up-and-coming matchup from week 12 of the NFL season and give you our best picks and bets by the point spread. And being that this is the Bay's Golden Days, of course, we're going to start off with the Raiders versus the Broncos. The Raiders will look to get some revenge for their earlier loss to the Broncos this season by being favored by 5 points at home against the Broncos this time. We all remember that was the game that Derek Carr went down with his back injury. EJ Manuel had to come into the game and almost won us a game late. Jared Cook had a drop touchdown in the end zone. Giorgio Tavecchio missed a field goal that game. We had a chance to win it, to tie it, whatever you want to say. The Raiders were still in this game while the Broncos were playing better, because as of recent, the Broncos are on a 6-game losing streak, sitting at 3-7, and I've mentioned it numerous times on this podcast, the vaunted no-fly zone defense has been giving out free flyer mileages left and right over the past 6 weeks, so I expect the Raiders, Derek Carr, and their offense should be able to get it back going against this Broncos defense that has truly been struggling. Don't get me wrong, they still got some great playmakers with Calvin Harris Jr., Aqib Talib, Von Miller will be a great matchup against Donald Penn in this offensive line, but I think this Raiders offense should be able to go and move the ball down this Broncos defense, who has been letting everybody just drive the ball on them with ease. I look for Derek Carr to get back on track. Like I said, you can't be averaging 4.8 yards per pass a game. When Derek Carr is averaging over 8 yards per pass, they've won games. When they're not, they've lost all the other games. It has been a true difference between philosophy. It's going to be interesting to see the philosophy that goes with this week. Todd Downing is going to have to put up some points, because coaching across from him is Bill Musgrave, the man that turned this Raiders offense into a top 5 or 6 offense last year, is now going to be coaching the offense for the Denver Broncos this week. Yes, he left to be their quarterback coach. The Broncos just fired their offense coordinator and now have promoted Bill Musgrave to offense coordinator just in time to play against his former team, the Oakland Raiders. Like it was written in a Hollywood script, Bill Musgrave will try to get his revenge and try to put the dagger in the Raiders season and end us. But hey, we saw what Bill Musgrave did last year. He lost a couple games for us. Most of the games we won was Derek Carr coming back late. I look for Derek Carr, Michael Crabtree, Amari Cooper, Jared Cook to have a big day. Michael Crabtree didn't even play in the first game this year. He's got to get some revenge still from getting his chain broken last year against Kip Tlaib. I look for him to have a big game, and I look for Khalil Mack to have another big game. Yes, I know I say this every week, but he is our defense. You harp on Shaun Lee and the Cowboys. I talk about Luke Kuechly and the Panthers. Khalil Mack is the Raiders' defense. We saw him single-handedly win games last year like he did against the Panthers, like he did against the Broncos last year when he had 5 sacks in one game. Hopefully he can do it again because Melnick Watson, the ex-Raider offensive tackle for the Broncos, has been getting beat up left and right all year long. So Khalil Mack should be able to get to the quarterback. I look for Bruce Irvin to have another big game. He has been kind of quiet since he had that big game against the Broncos earlier in the year, but I look for Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack to totally disrupt the pass rush because they might be starting a rookie quarterback. We might see Paxton Lynch out there for the first time. Who knows? It might be Brock Osweiler, Trevor Siemian. Either way, none of those three guys strike fear in my heart. I think the Raiders defense, as bad as they've been all year, should be able to contain this quarterback. But hey, I'm saying this while Jay Cutler absolutely tore us up. So either way, it could be a high scoring game, could be a low scoring game. But at the end of the day, I'm taking the Raiders to win at home in a must win game. It's win or go home now. We're sitting at 4-6. Hey, we can still get into the playoffs with a 9-6 record. Hell, who knows? Even maybe an 8-8 record will get you into the AFC the way that things are playing out right now. It is truly a crazy league. There are 6 weeks left in the NFL season, and anything can happen. But to kick off week 12 of the NFL season, I am taking the Raiders -5 points at home over the Denver Broncos. And then let's go back and rewind because it is a special week of Straight Cash, homie, right here on the Bay's Golden Days because it is Thanksgiving week. Yes, Thanksgiving time in football is a great one to be thankful for food, family, and football, of course. So let's go ahead and look at Thursday morning to kick off Turkey Day. We got the Vikings traveling to Detroit to take on the Lions. The Minnesota Vikings are 3-point favorites. As I said, Case Keenum has been playing unbelievable for a third-string quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater is inching closer and closer and closer back to return, but you can't really make the switch right now unless something crazy happens to Keenum next game against the Lions. Who knows? Ziggy Ansah could break off a turkey leg, and we might get Teddy Bridgewater in there. I don't know, but I am taking the Vikings to get this win on the road. I look for Matthew Stafford to be throwing all game long against his good defense from the Vikings. They'll try to shut down that Lions offense, and if they can, the Vikings should be able to stick to the run like they've been doing the last couple weeks with Latavius Murray and playing sound enough defense to the point where I think they do get the win and improve to 9-2 on the road, -3 points. Give me the Vikings. Then in the afternoon slot for Thanksgiving, we got the Chargers facing the Cowboys. This is just a weird matchup to see, and especially on Thanksgiving, you know, we're so used to these NFC North division matchups, how NFC East division matchups on Thanksgiving, and we got the Chargers and the Cowboys. I'm not sure how that makes sense, but the Cowboys playing at home, Jerry World on Thanksgiving, got to be thankful for that. They are favored by only 1 point over the Chargers. Hey, I know I make fun of the Chargers all the time on this podcast, but they have been playing better. Phillip Rivers has been playing better. They got a lot of young talent. I've been talking about it all year with Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, one of the best pass rushers in the league, Melvin Gordon on the offense, Keenan Allen on offense. They're still getting the job done, so I think it's going to be interesting with Bosa and Ingram rushing this pass. If the Cowboys get Tyron Smith back, Shaun Lee has already been ruled back, but if Tyron Smith plays, I think the Cowboys got a chance. I'll put my bet on Tyron Smith playing for the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, and I will take the Cowboys -1 point. And then to top off Thanksgiving with the dessert first, we got the Giants and the Redskins. The Redskins are actually favored by 7.5 points at home. We've seen the Giants be terrible, and we've seen the Giants beat the Chiefs. So what the hell are we going to get on Thanksgiving? Who knows? We might get a turducket. There might be a duck hiding inside of the turkey somehow, and the Giants could pull off an upset win. I don't want to bet on this game, and if it's a division game, I might just have to take the Giants and the points because I don't think the Redskins are going to win by more than a touchdown. A touchdown seems reasonable, but this could be a game decided by a field goal, so I might just have to take the Giants plus the points on Thursday night football. Thanksgiving special. And then let's go ahead and move on to Sunday. Back to Sunday, we already talked about the Raiders and the Broncos. We got the Buccaneers and the Falcons facing off in a division game. The Falcons are favored by 9.5 points over the Bucs. Still no word on Jameis Winston of how long he truly is going to be out. Fitzpatrick has been playing better, but even this week when they had the lead, they couldn't get the rush game going with Doug Martin. I'm not too confident in this Buccaneers offense. They've got upsets the past 2 weeks and have won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days, but I think the Buccaneers train ends here in Atlanta, so I will take the Falcons to win this one by a blowout. Give me the Falcons minus 9.5 points. Another division matchup in the AFC North. We got the Browns and the Bengals. The Browns still looking for that first W of the year. Can they get it in a division game against the Bengals? I'm not too quite sure. The Bengals just beat the Broncos last week. Andy Dalton got the job done with AJ Green. It'll be interesting. This Browns defense has been playing better. They've had a couple first half leads, so put them at half and 10 on the year, whatever you want to call it. The Browns, like I mentioned, still alive for the playoffs. They're gonna win now, and they're gonna win every single week after this week, and they're gonna make the playoffs, bro. No, I'm absolutely lying to you. I don't think the Browns win this season. They go 0-16. Give me the Bengals, minus 8.5 points. Moving on next, we got the Titans and the Colts in the AFC South Division matchup. The Titans are favored by 3.5 points. You guys know my story. Even though the Colts are coming off a bye, if there's no Andrew Luck, there's no betting on the Bay's Golden Days for the Indianapolis Colts. Give me the Titans and Marcus Mariota to get back on track. The Titans, minus 3.5 on the road over the Colts. The Bills and the Chiefs is a game I do not want to bet on. I'll just be completely honest with you. We don't know what the Bills are going to do. The Chiefs have lost 4 of their last 5 games. They're playing absolutely pathetic, and they're a 10-point favorite over the Bills. Yes, I know the Chargers just put up an absolutely ass-whooping on the Bills and beat them by 30, 40 points, whatever the hell it was, but the Chiefs' offense has been sputtering, so I'm not too confident in that 10-point spread. The better bet might just be the Bills in a closer game, but this is a game that I truly just want to stay away from, so we'll keep it moving now with the Dolphins and the Patriots facing off in the AFC East. The Patriots are favored by 16 points. I'm pretty sure that's a new record for point spread right here on the Bay's Golden Days. 16 goddamn points. Winning by more than 2 touchdowns against the Dolphins. We know that the Patriots have been better against the spread the past couple weeks. The start off the year, they were terrible against the spread. This does kind of concern me a little bit because it's a division opponent. The Dolphins have already played them once this year. That just means that the Patriots could kill them even worse than they did the first time. But division games, I usually think they're a lot closer than that, so I'm not too confident with the 16 points. I definitely think the Patriots will win, but I might have to take the Dolphins plus the points to cover the spread. Moving on to the Panthers and the Jets. The Panthers are coming off a bye and are favored by 4.5 points over the Jets. The Jets were also on a bye, so these teams had 2 weeks to prepare for each other. Not too big of an advantage for either or, so I will have to stick with the Cam Newton and the Panthers, who have been playing pretty well lately, sitting at 7-3. I look for them to improve to 8-3. And improve their wild card chances if they're not able to chase down those mighty, mighty Saints. I will still take Cam Newton to beat the Jets, minus 4.5 points. The Bears and the Eagles are next up on our schedule as we got another big point spread. The Eagles are favored by 13.5 points over the Bears. The way that the Eagles have been playing lately, they've been blowing everybody out of the water. The Bears have been keeping things close, but I don't think they'll be able to keep it close against this Eagles team that has been so good on both sides of the ball. They are one of the top run defenses in the league, so Jordan Howard should run into a couple problems, but Alfred Moore still got 90 yards last week. I think Jordan Howard has a decent day, but I think the Eagles win this one big. Give me the Eagles by 2 touchdowns. They will cover that 13.5-point spread. The Seahawks come into Santa Clara to take on the 49ers, and they are favored by 6.5 points. This is Jimmy Garoppolo's first start. He's had 2 weeks to prepare for it coming off a bye week. Is it the start of the Jimmy G era in Santa Clara? I guess we'll see. He could be Brian Hoyer 2.0. He could be Matt Castle 2.0. He could be, who knows, Jacoby Brissett? Would Niner fans be happy with that? Who knows? But the Niners are actually smart enough to play him, because you can't just go into this offseason, pay this man $24 million and not even know what he's able to do. The Jimmy Garoppolo experience starts now in Santa Clara, and I think it starts with a loss. I will take the Seahawks to bounce back from that big Monday night loss. They need a win to stay in that wild card hunt and to try to hunt down the Rams for that NFC West title. So give me the Seahawks, minus 6.5 points. I think they demolished the Niners at home. Jimmy Garoppolo should be able to put up a show, though, because he won't have Richard Sherman to worry about, won't have Cam Chancellor to worry about. I think he'll be all right eventually, but I do think that the Seahawks win this one big. Give me the Seahawks minus 6.5 points. And then moving on to the Saints and the Rams and what could be a preview of an NFC playoff battle. The Saints with an 8-2 record will be going into Los Angeles to take on the Rams with that 7-3 record, two of the hottest teams in football, and the Rams are favored by 2.5 points. I might just have to go with the Saints for the upset. The way that Drew Brees is playing right now, the way that they're running the ball, it's going to be great to see the matchup between Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram going head up against Aaron Donald, one of the best defensive linemen in the league. The Rams just got beat last week by the Vikings. I think the Saints are better than the Vikings, so I will take the Saints by NFL math to beat the Rams plus 2.5 points and get you that upset right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. Moving on next, we got the Jaguars and the Cardinals facing off in Arizona. I don't like Blaine Gabbert facing off against one of the best defenses in the league. It's that simple. So for that reason alone, I will take the Jaguars and Leonard Fournette to win by 4.5 points over the Cardinals on the road. The Packers and the Steelers as we get to primetime football Sunday night. And what have I said about the primetime Steelers? Ben Roethlisberger has won 5 in a row, has won 10 out of his last 11 primetime games. Big game Ben is going to show out. And without Aaron Rodgers, this is not even going to be a game. I look for the Steelers to win big, and they're going to have to win big to cover that 14-point spread. Oh, man, the Steelers usually play down to the level of their competition, but if they play like they have been playing in primetime lately, there's no reason that the Steelers can't put up 20, 30, 40 on this Packers defense and cover that big spread. So I will take the Steelers minus 14 to beat the Packers Sunday night football before we get to Monday night football in a battle between the Texans and the Ravens. And I don't know how this game is still on Monday night and it hasn't been flexed out yet, because who wants to see Tom Savage versus Joe Flacco on Monday night football? It truly is disgraceful. The Ravens are favored by 7 points. I haven't seen the Ravens beat any team by 7 points since they played the Raiders, so I might have to take the Texans plus the points for the upset. If not, the Ravens once again are just going to go out there and kick the ball away with Justin Tucker and win by 3, win by 6. I don't see them winning by a touchdown, so I will take the Texans for the upset plus 7. And that is every single pick from week 12 of the NFL season right here during Straight Cash, homie, on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. So let me get a quick review for you. All the game picks by the point spread, no BS, just points, just straight cash, homie. On Thursday, Thanksgiving, we're starting off with the Vikings taking out the Lions, minus 3 points. The Cowboys over the Chargers, minus 1 point. I've got the Giants with the upset to at least cover the 7.5 point spreads if the Redskins don't win. Buccaneers and the Falcons, I will take the Falcons, minus 9.5. Browns and the Bengals, I'll take the Bengals, minus 8.5. Titans and the Colts, give me the Titans, minus 3.5. Bills and the Chiefs, the Bills and the points might be the better bet, but I like the Chiefs to win that game. The Dolphins and the Patriots, I like the Patriots in this one, but again, the Dolphins and the points might be the better bet. The Panthers and the Jets, I like the Panthers, minus 4.5 points. The Bears and the Eagles, give me the Eagles to win by 2 touchdowns and cover that 13.5 point spread. The Seahawks and the Niners, the Seahawks should win by a touchdown easy and cover that 6.5 point spread. The Saints and the Rams, give me the Saints for the upset plus 2.5 points. The Jaguars and the Cardinals, I'll take the Jags minus 4.5. The Broncos and the Raiders, I'll take the Raiders minus 5. The Packers and the Steelers, I look for the Steelers to get the W, minus 14. And the Texans and the Ravens, Monday Night Football, the Texans plus 7 for the upset. That is every single bet right here during Straight Cash, homie, of the Bay's Golden Days week 12 NFL season. Let's get it. It's do or die time for the Oakland Raiders. Got to get our revenge against the Broncos for hurting Derek Carr. I hope Derek has one hell of a day. I hope he gets a win. I hope the Raiders get the win. I hope we win this week. I hope we win next week. I hope we run them off back to back to back and we somehow get back into this AFC wild card playoff race. Hell, if the Chiefs keep on losing, we still got a chance for the AFC West. This season is not over yet. I've started this podcast off with the 0-10 Browns. I'll end it with the 0-10 Browns. If they're still mathematically alive, you better damn believe it that the Raiders are still mathematically alive. And I've been saying it all year. I have not given up on the Raiders yet. Put your money where your motherfucking mouth is. I still got the Raiders as a playoff team. You do not want to play us in the first round of the playoffs. I will tell you that. It doesn't matter how bad our defense has been playing. If this offense can finally get back on track, track. We can be one of the better teams in this NFL, and I will look for the Raiders to win this weekend over the Broncos, get back on track, get back into that wild card race, and get back to the Bay's golden days right here, right now. Thank you so much for listening, downloading, and subscribing. I am Marcus Boucher. I hope you guys enjoy Thanksgiving this week. You can download and subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. Check us out on social media at Bay's Golden Days. You know what it is, baby.
Sold it. Sold it. Sold it. Sold it.
Steady gold. Pony boy.